This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasodhi. In our health and living segment today, Dr. Mastura Mohammad Yusuf, a clinical oncologist from Subang Jaya Medical Center. We're discussing early detection and diagnosis of cancers. Welcome to the show, Dr. Mastura. How are you today?
Thank you, Meera. I'm feeling very, very good. Thanks.
Dr. Mastura, most patients whose cancers are detected and treated early have better long-term survival than patients whose cancers are not found until symptoms appear. And we all know that. Why do you think then we all seem to present late? And today's focus is going to be very much on colorectal cancer as well as lung cancer. But in general, our culture, our behavior, why is it that we wait so long to come to get ourselves diagnosed?
I think it boils down to not being aware of the risk factors. So I think the public has to understand that cancers are becoming more common. What are the cancers that are the most commonly affecting people, the public, such as, you know, breast cancer, lung cancer, colorectal cancer, or nasopharyngeal cancer, or cervix, or lymphoma. So, and by knowing these type of cancers and by knowing what are their risk, so risk factors are factors that may increase a chance of getting cancer. So if we look at the cancer specifically, for example, colorectal cancer, the risk of colorectal cancer occurring in an individual increases if they have family history of having someone in the family with colorectal cancer or a polyp, or if they are more than 50 years old, for example. Or they have history of, they themselves have history of polyp, for example. Or if they are obese or they have a very sedentary lifestyle, they are smoking and as well as taking alcohol. So these are risk factors that may contribute to them having an increased risk for colorectal cancer. So by being aware of these risk factors, they should know when they can actually go for screening, for example. So they have to, again, now know that there are screening available for colorectal cancer. So what are the screening modality that they can go for?
Okay. The way I look at it, there are three risk factors which seem to be common throughout for any sort of cancer, you know, whether it's heart disease and stuff like that, family history, smoking, obesity, the three common ones. So what sets colorectal cancer apart in terms of risk factors would be the fact that you're over 50 and you could possibly have the history of polyps. Am I correct in saying that? Yes, is there any other risk factor?
Based from our own national data, you can see that the risk factor, the incidence of colorectal cancer in our Malaysian female and male starts to peak, really peak after the age of 50. So it's like maybe 80% of our patient population is above 50. So at the age of 50, that is the time that because of the environmental exposure, because of the aging factor that has led to perhaps a polyp forming. So a polyp is a benign growth that if you leave it alone will eventually turn into cancer. So it's like a transition from a normal epithelium in your colon, then it becomes a benign, like acne, like in the mucosa of the colon. Then later on, if you 10, 15 years later, it turns into cancer. So if you can actually detect the polyp at that stage and remove it, so you actually, you know, primarily remove the risk of you developing cancer in the future.
Okay. But colorectal cancer is the number two cause of death or most common, second most common cancer amongst men. What about women?
Actually, colorectal cancer is the most common among men in Malaysia, according to our latest cancer registry from 2007 to 2011. But it's the second most common among male and female together.
Okay.
So for female, it's the second most common after breast. For men, it's number one.
Okay. So you've said now numbers peak over the age of 50 when it comes to colorectal cancer. So what do you suggest? That we all screen from the age of 50? I mean, just like how we all do mammograms from the age of 40. We, of course, do pap smears when we are sexually active. But mammograms, for an example. So should everybody be screening after the age of 50?
I believe that the risk starts before the age of 50 because 50 and above is for cancer to occur. But if you want to screen for asymptomatic cancer or if you want to screen for polyp, you can actually do that earlier than 50.
A preventive measure.
Yes. So perhaps especially if you have family history, then maybe you can actually actively go for screening at perhaps age of 45. If, let's say, you have two family members that has colorectal cancer at young age, then you can go even earlier. But you should discuss with your doctor first before going through screening. And they look at all your risk factors, what is the likelihood of having polyp, then you go for screening. But the screening modality that is available, for example, for cancer, the screening modality is actually you can do stool occult blood tests or stool DNA tests for blood. And of course, there is a scope, colonoscopy, a sigmoidoscopy. So if, let's say, a person goes for screening and found to have blood in their stool, either from the fecal occult blood test or from the DNA fleet test, then they have to go for the screening colonoscopy.
Okay, so that is basically how what happens. So
I am suggesting that we study earlier, not at 50 years old, actually, for our Malaysian population.
So what do you suggest, 45. Say, at 45, what do you suggest? A stool occult test?
You can do the simple stool DNA test or stool occult blood test, which is available in Malaysia.
What do you do? It's just a blood test?
No, you just take, you collect your stool samples and send it to the lab.
Oh, as detect, simple as that.
Yes, and then they detect the presence of blood. If there are presence of blood, then you go and do the scope to look for any polyp, any tumour.
Is that why they say vast majority of colon cancers can be prevented?
Because there are two subtypes of causes for colorectal cancer. One is your non-modifiable risk factor. That means your age, you know, your personal history, family history, if you have inflammatory bowel disease. But the majority of the causes can be the modifiable risk factors, the obesity, the smoking, the alcohol, the sedentary lifestyle. So these are the modifiable risk factors. So if you have both, then I would say go for primary prevention by doing screening.
By the age of 45. Men and women, would you suggest?
I'll say men and women. Okay. Because the age when they start to have colorectal cancer is the same, about 50 for both.
Ah, Dr. Masrua, now I have to add one more test, screening test, to my list.
But you see, when they do screening colonoscopy, right? Let's say you're at 50 and you do a screening colonoscopy, you only have to repeat it 10 years later, or maybe 5 to 10 years later. So it's not really, you have to do it every year. So it's just 5 to 10 years later you do, if let's say that they don't find any abnormality. But if let's say they find a polyp, then you can actually repeat it in 1 to 3 years like that, just to continuously monitoring for any more for polyp formation, for example.
Okay. So if you have one polyp, what do you do? Do you need to remove it? Do you just need to monitor it?
So usually the surgeon, when they performing the colonoscopy, they will actually remove the polyp, and the polyp will be sent for pathological examination. And then if the polyp is benign, then they will arrange for another scope for the patient.
Okay. Recently, there was a lot of, well, not recently, 2015, there was an article or research done about processed meat. How bad is processed meat, red meat, when it comes to colorectal cancer?
Okay, for colorectal cancer, one of the modifiable risk factors is actually diet. So the diet group that has been researched to increase the risk for colorectal cancer is actually red meat consumption and processed meat. And that is probably because the quality of the meat is poor. And because it's a processed meat, like you know, that salami, like sausages, like burgers, these are not just meat, but they are also, they have sedatives, they have they're preserved. So they have chemicals that over time may turn into carcinogen and irritate your bowel mucosa, and thus cause changes in the cell or mutation, and then causes cancer. So I would actually advise that we reduce our processed meat consumption over time.
What about red meat?
Red meat in moderation, in moderate amount, is okay as long as it's fresh. You know, it's like it's not the part of the meat that has a lot of fatty parts. Maybe not that kind of red meat.
Lean meat.
Lean meat, yes.
Okay. All right then. So when it comes to colorectal cancers, so signs and symptoms are very standard. Would you say blood in the stools?
The symptoms of colorectal cancer actually may mimic other benign conditions such as hemorrhoids, such as inflammatory bowel disease. So often that the symptoms are not captured early because they think, oh, it's hemorrhoid or it's, you know, it's anal laceration or anal tear because they have constipation. So early part of the disease, usually they don't have any symptoms because even if the patient bleeds, it is mixed in the stool and will not be apparent to the person. When they do have perirectal bleeding, when they do have pain, when they do have altered bowel habit, I mean, they have alternating diarrhea, constipation, usually it's more locally advanced than early stage.
Okay.
At the time.
We're discussing colorectal cancer and as well as we'll come back and find out more about lung cancer awareness. Dr. Mastura Mohammad Yusuf, a clinical oncologist from Subang Jaya Medical Center with us. We're going to be focusing more on early detection and diagnosis of cancers. So we'll come back and discuss that up next. On The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. In our Health and Living segment, we're discussing early detection and diagnosis of cancers, colorectal cancer and lung cancer in particular. Joining me, Dr. Mastura Mohammad Yusuf, a clinical oncologist. Dr. Mastura has gone through quite a bit about colorectal cancer already. You have modifiable risk factors and non-modifiable risk factors. I think non-modifiable risk factors being if you are above the age of 50 or you have a history of polyps, then you may want to go and get yourself checked out. Having said that, Dr. Mastura says it is much better to prevent this from happening because mostly by the age of 50 and above, it is already cancer. So at 45, she's actually recommending that we go and get ourselves checked out. You can do either a stool occult test, a DNA test, or a colonoscopy, depending on what you want to do. So that's good advice. At the age of 45, perhaps look at more preventive rather than waiting for a diagnosis and having to treat it after. I think one of the other things that we need to bear in mind is colorectal cancer is one of the very most common cancers here in Malaysia amongst men and women. So something for us to really take a little bit more seriously. Do you see younger patients coming in, Dr. Mastura, with colorectal cancer?
Yeah. We are seeing younger patients with colorectal cancer. So we see as young as 29, in my practice, 29 to about early 50s. And most of them are working men and women. And most of them are in stage 2 and 3 disease and some in stage 4. So the patients who come with stage 1 cancer is not many.
Okay, why is that? Do we know why?
These are patients whom their cancers are detected either by incident because they do some investigation for other causes, or these are patients who go for screening.
Is it common amongst the younger generation, or is it just, rare, would you say?
It's not rare because it is a common cancer. So we usually will have a new case in a week. And generally, the age will be about 40-ish, generally. There are some who are more than 60s, but 40-ish to 50-ish is quite common.
Okay, so screen occult tests, should we start at 40 then? I'm bringing the age down. You recommend at 45 just now. I'm like,
yeah,
just to be on the safe
if
side.
If they have a strong family history, yes,
okay,
then they can actually screen earlier if they have strong family history.
There seems to be a sense of embarrassment when it comes to colorectal cancer examination and that's why you're seeing people coming in and being diagnosed late. What would you say to that? Why the embarrassment?
I think it's because of the stigma of shoving a scope through the anus that may make patients, feel embarrassed about the whole situation. And also the mode of us actually, for example, filling the rectum, we have to actually do a digital rectal examination. So some patients may feel uncomfortable.
What does that entail?
We have to assess the inner part of the anus and the rectum by putting our finger through the anus and feel for any tumour. So we do that for digital rectal examination. We do for lower rectal tumours, basically rectum, anus. And we also do that to actually feel the prostate for male patients. So maybe some patients may not feel comfortable about that mode of trying to assess. But that is a medical examination that we have to do in order for us to feel for any abnormal mass in the lower colorectal region, which is the rectum and the anus.
So does that mean that you being a female oncologist, which are very few of them around actually, do you see more women coming to you?
I would say it's 50-50 in terms of colorectal cancer, yeah.
Because I can imagine it is, well, as you described it, it is not something that, anybody would want to go through, but what would you say to me? That it is okay, Mira. You can come and do this. I do it all the time. Mm-hmm. It is fine. I mean, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter to you, of course, but it does to me. It's an invasion of your, you know. Mm-hmm. What would you say to me?
I would say that this is a necessary examination. It doesn't give you a lot of pain. I will use a lubricant to actually do the examination so that it will not be, you know, there won't be any pain because it's going to be more fluidy when we put in our finger. And you can let me know if you're uncomfortable while I'm doing it. It's actually a very quick examination. I would say less than 15 seconds.
Right.
For us to actually feel that part. And when we do that, right, the patient will be on a semi-fetal position and the patient will be actually facing the wall with their back towards us, and then we'll do it quickly like that.
Okay.
So they're not even looking at us actually, because they're actually looking to the wall. And we do it in clinic. It's a very simple examination that can be done in clinic. There's no need for, you know, preparation, like OT preparation or something like that, or daycare. You don't have to do that. It's very quick. It's usually not so painful unless the patient has a, you know, a huge mass, for example. But when we are inserting our finger and we can actually feel a mass obstructing the finger, then we just stop it there because we know.
Right.
Yeah.
That it needs further investigation.
Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough. Let's move on to lung cancer. Lung cancer, of course, we all know. When you see lung cancer, you always think of the smokers, but that's not really the case, Dr. Mastura, today. I mean, you have non-smokers,
right,
and, you know, those with even who are exposed to secondhand or passive smokers also are at risk. Do we have numbers as to what is the percentage?
I think from literature search, it's about 80-20. So 80% of lung cancers are caused by smokers and those who are exposed to secondary smoke, while 20% are not due to smoking.
Okay. And when you talk about lung cancer, there are many types. Is there a blood test for lung cancer, perhaps? How do you diagnose? And we know most people come in late. Diagnosis is late because symptoms aren't really present. Is there a blood test for lung cancer?
There are no blood tests to detect lung cancer. There are no tumour markers that can actually detect lung cancer. And previously, people have actually done a screening chest X-ray or a sputum, means your phlegm, and do a cytology. But all these tests have not been shown to detect lung cancer and also cause a reduction in survival from lung cancer because you detect it early. So none of these tests has been shown to be successful in lung cancer. So lung cancer has two types. Basically, in broad general term, it has two types. One is a small cell lung cancer, and this type is associated with smoking. More than 90% of small cell lung cancer is due to smoking. And the other type is non-small cell lung cancer. One is small, one is non-small. And how they are differentiated is based on how they look like under the microscope, how the cells look like under the microscope. So for non-small cell lung cancer, you have three types at least under the non-small cell lung cancer category, which is adenocarcinoma, and then squamous cell carcinoma and large cell carcinoma. So adenocarcinoma is the type that is increasing in incidence in the last 20 to 30 years.
Why?
I mean, they're not certain why adenocarcinoma is increasing and replacing small cell and squamous. It does has association with smoking, but we also see a larger number of patient population with adenocarcinoma who are non-smokers, who are female, who are young, and who are Asian in ethnicity. So nobody can actually pinpoint why, but this is a trend that we are seeing now in lung cancer patients. So for people who are smokers and who develop adenocarcinoma, so some people have suggested that because of the filter in cigarette smoke now, so people actually inhale the cigarette smoke and the carcinogen more deeply, and the carcinogen in the smoke gets deposited deeper into the lung and giving rise to adenocarcinoma rather than small cell, which is or smoke squamous, which is in the bronchus, in the initial part of your airway. This one is like in the later part within the lung tissue itself.
Okay. So at the entry point, rather than you're seeing it more inside, deeper in the lung as opposed to on the surface of the lung.
This is for the smokers. For the non-smokers,
Still don't know. Let's talk about pollution. I mean, according to a Lancet research, pollution claimed the lives of about 9 million people in 2015 in the world. That's one in six deaths. Half of them, of course, from India and China. But so would you discount lung pollution as something that's also just as something that we should be concerned about?
I mean, other causes for lung cancer besides smoking is, of course, radiation such as radon air, such as chemicals or radiation that is emitted from soil, for example, from water, from pollution that is inhaled by the patient day to day, and that causes the damage to the lung tissue and then subsequently lung cancer. But so many of us are actually exposed to the same kind of
Could you give me examples of it?
I think not to say actual pollution, but those who are the mine, people who work in mines, those who work in the asbestos factories, for example, they are the ones who are more at risk because every day they are exposed to the same environment. So for those, yes. For those who have been exposed to radiation, for example, those who work in radiation factories, yes. But their number is actually small if you compare to smoking-associated lung cancer.
So smoking is still the huge risk factor there.
Yes.
All right. I was reading that lung cancer can go unseen for up to 20 years.
I can't comment on that because we know that lung cancer is silent at the initial stage. Usually, I think more than 75% of patients, when they are diagnosed, they are already at locally advanced to advanced stage. But it is silent in the initial stage. That's true. But for 20 years, I mean, the cancer is really indolent, and that's really not the behavior of lung cancer that I know of.
Okay. I suppose maybe with asbestos exposure and stuff, take a long time, doesn't it?
They get lung cancer, they get mesothelioma, which is a tumor at the pleural envelope of the lung, actually, for asbestos-related cancers.
Okay. Let's go straight to screening, really. Mm-hmm. There's no screening for lung cancer.
There is, actually, to be honest.
Fantastic. Okay, but, just tell me, it's a simple blood test.
None at all.
Okay. None at all, yes.
So I think in the US, there is a National Lung Cancer Screening Consortium, I would say, where the public who are recommended to do screening are those who are 55 to 75 years old, and they are either still smoking or they have quit smoking in the last 15 years. So if they are 55 years old, they quit smoking at age 40. They can actually go for screening. And these people who are either ever smokers and they are 55 to 75, they can do this screening test called low-dose CT scan. So it's not chest X-ray, it's not sputum cytology. It's actually a low-dose CT scan. So it's a CT scan where the doctors can image the lung in various cross-sectional images, but at a lower radiation dose in order for them to detect small nodules, for example, so that they can actually detect the lung cancer earlier, at early stage.
Has it been effective?
It has been in the US because for a screening to be recommended by all the international association or bodies, it has been shown to reduce survival from the lung cancer. So in the US, trials have shown that it reduces the survival rate because you detect it early, you reduce the death because of lung cancer. But of course, this screening is not common here. I mean, we do not advertise for or advocate screening as such as in the US. But in the US, the insurance actually cover for you to do this.
Not on a national level in Malaysia, but as an individual, if we would like to screen, do we request for a low-dose CT scan?
Or
who do you see? Who do you go and see?
You can see a chest physician that can actually go through your history and look at, are there any risk factors other than smoking, such as family history, such as having a chronic lung disease that may increase a person's risk factor other than smoking, and then they can actually proceed to do the low-dose CT scan, then look at the results.
What have been your observations of people coming in with lung cancer? Are there any common sort of themes coming through in that, they're of Malaysian-ness, what's coming through in your clinic?
Actually, I have two groups of patients. One is the one who are ever smokers, and the other one is the one that does not fit the criteria for screening or the criteria for somebody to
the 20%.
So these are the patients who are young ladies, in their 40s, whom, when they are diagnosed, they are almost always in advanced stage of cancer because it's just so sudden. You know, it's like a very silent kind of cancer. Until they have symptoms like bone pain, or they have symptoms from brain metastasis, then they will be diagnosed. Or they have lumps in the neck, then they are diagnosed to have lung cancer. But they can be doing day-to-day activities just like any of us, and then suddenly they have the diagnosis. So yep. That and group of patients we are also seeing more now.
Sure. And so they are diagnosed late. Is it because the cancer is aggressive, or just that, you know, they've been diagnosed very late?
It's both, I think. One is the non-awareness that they can actually get that diagnosis. So maybe they have had feeling of unwellness, or they have had some chest pain, or they have some, you know, unexplained cough, or losing weight without any reason, but they did not see that as a warning sign.
I wouldn't.
Yeah, that's right. So they won't see it as a warning sign, because when they are in the 40s and if they are female, right, that is the time that they will also be so busy with career, with family, things like that. So they would delay because they are so busy with work. They just delay seeing a doctor. That's one. Number two is aggressiveness. You're right.
And is that aggressive in general for all patients or just in some?
When a patient sees us and they are already in locally advanced or advanced stage, right? By nature, the cancer is already aggressive because they have reached a point where there's just so many mutation that has occurred in the last few months before the patient sees us. So the aggressive is like natural due to the length that the patient has had that cancer.
So the cancer has just taken over, really. Mm. What do you say to them and what do you recommend in terms of treatment, Dr. Mastura? Is it even worth treating?
It is worth treating because there are, out of 100 lung cancer patients, about 40 to 50 of them now actually has established mutation that we can identify by checking their tumour. So if they have adenocarcinoma type of cancer, and if we check the tumour and we find the mutation, we can actually treat them with simple oral drugs targeting the mutation that can actually give them a prolongation of life as well as quality of life at very minimal toxicity.
This is at advanced stage?
Yes, we're talking about advanced stage here.
Okay, and are you just buying a little bit of time or you know?
Not really, because if you can get, you can identify the mutation, right? Median survival for patients with advanced stage lung cancer, even with bone, even with brain metastasis, can be more than 2 years. And also we have new drugs such as immunotherapy, where if you can identify that the patient has that characteristic, the expression of for responsiveness towards immunotherapy, they can do very well also, more than 2 years, maybe up to 5 years even for some really lucky patient, actually.
But immunotherapy may not be suitable for everybody, would you say?
Because for all of these patients, right, before we employ such strategy or such approach, we do tests. It's like a predictive test to see whether they are going to be responsive to this treatment. So like I said, for adenocarcinoma, about 40% of them may have EGFR mutation tests where EGFR mutation positive. Then we will give them the few type of targeted therapy to target the EGFR mutation. Some of them may have ALK. So a few years ago, only one drug was available to target ALK mutation. Now we have 3 drugs and it gets better. I mean, the second drug is better. Then the third drug is even better than the first and second. And then we have immunotherapy, which is we do the PD-L1 expression to see whether the area of the tumour is responsive or is infiltrated by immune cells. Then only we give that approach. So it's like you can have a predictive test to predict whether a patient will respond to the treatment. So if they don't have it, we don't give it. We give them the other alternatives. So about 50 to 60% of patients do not have any of this, and then they will be treated with the chemotherapy or other therapies that are available, like radiotherapy, for example.
Okay, so that's advancements in lung cancer.
Yeah, so it is worth treating if you can identify the type of cancer that they have.
Okay, what about colorectal cancer, just to come back to that? Mm-hmm. Any advancements in treatment?
In colorectal cancer, if you are talking about early stage, right? So we are now looking at probably reducing the number of chemotherapy for patients who are in earlier stage of the disease. So patients who have stage 2, we only give one drug, for example. Patients who have early stage 3, then instead of 6 months of chemotherapy, we give 3 months. I think that is an advancement in oncology because we're giving treatment that can still cure the patient just as well, but we're reducing the duration of treatment to limit the toxicity of our treatment to the patient. I mean, reducing side effects. In terms of advanced stage, we also have more drugs. We also have mutation testing, like RAS test, like BRAF, for us to choose what drug to give our patient based on what kind of tumor that they have. We also have immunotherapy strategy. Again, but maybe the number of patients that may be benefiting is small. For example, for immunotherapy, when we do the test, the MSIH test, probably about 8% of our patient population has it. But still, for that particular patient, that particular individual, if they are positive for the MSIH and we give immunotherapy, then they are the one who's going to benefit most. So it's individual, it's tailored to the patient's type of tumor. So it's not personalized approach, targeting to the tumor, the patient characteristics, as well as, of course, the availability of the drug.
Huge advancements, isn't it? I mean, it has based on what you've seen, I'm sure.
Yes, we are also overwhelmed.
I'm sure. And then the developments.
Getting older by the day. Too many for us.
Developments coming out every day.
Yep, that's right. It's very dynamic.
How do you keep on the ball? You have to, isn't it? You don't have a choice.
I think we constantly update ourselves. We have a society that makes sure that we have programs. We go for conferences. We search the websites. We join various bodies, you know, like the European Society of Medical Oncology. So we are constantly being updated about what are the latest research findings, as well as I think the clinical experience, and then we share.
What will be your message on early diagnosis and detection of lung cancer and colorectal cancer?
I would like for our Malaysian population to be aware about the threat of cancer to our lives at the moment. I think our youth in Malaysia are very laid back in their approaches. You need to know your family history. You need to know your risks. You have to continue to maintain a healthy lifestyle because almost all cancers are related to overweight, sedentary lifestyle, poor dietary habits, and stress, smoking and alcohol, for example. So if we know that these risk factors that increases our rate of getting any type of cancers, then we should actively control those risk factors. And then make sure that we are empowered in terms of knowledge about how to prevent. Like you're saying, you're asking what age shall I do this? At what age shall I do that?
Early screening.
Yeah. And ask the correct questions.
Okay.
And also probably educate ourselves. So you can actually speak to your colleague or you can speak to your friends about this in your conversation rather than just looking at the phone. And there's no conversation on the table at all.
Take away one message from this interview. And actually, for me, it's very valuable is the whole idea of doing a stool occult test, which is which is quite simple, probably at the age of 45 for both men and women. It's something very simple to detect blood, whether or not it's in your stool. That's for colorectal cancer. For lung cancer, well, I think for the 80% who smoke, the answer is there for you on the table as to what you should be doing. But for the 20%, what do you say to them, Dr. Mastura?
I guess you have to listen to your body. So whenever you have symptoms that are just not right or it's something that is new. Yeah, like for example, weight loss. You shouldn't have weight loss if you're not trying to lose weight, especially not when you are 40, 45, you know. So go and see a doctor and discuss. And from the conversation, from the consultation, the doctor may ask you questions that you did not realize it is important. And from there, a physical examination and some tests can be conducted and you may be able to actually see something.
And the doctor we should be seeing is a GP?
you can see a GP first, and then the GP will screen and do the necessary investigation and then refer accordingly. So if, let's say, you have a lymph node in your neck that you have basically ignored for a while, but later on you start to have feeling of unwellness or you know, a bit of cough, but not really chest pain, or not really hemoptysis, where you produce blood in the sputum, right? But the lymph node, which you think is normal, is not normal at all to a doctor.
Meaning it's a slightly swollen or it's slightly enlarged.
It's enlarged, yep. And it's there, it doesn't disappear. Mm-hmm. So any doctor that actually sees a lymph node should assess for the cause. If the lymph node has been there for more than 2 weeks without any change in the size.
Okay, because sometimes your lymph nodes are enlarged when you have...
URTI, yeah, but it will disappear after the URTI is treated.
So when you go on antibiotics or whatever.
Yeah,
then.
And usually it's painful. But for lymph node that is enlarged due to cancer, it's usually painless and it's hard and it doesn't disappear.
Okay, so look out, listen to your body is really what you're saying. Thank you very much for joining us today. Dr. Mastura Mohamad Yusuf, a clinical oncologist from Subangjaya Medical Center, speaking to us about early detection and diagnosis of cancers with a focus on colorectal cancer and lung cancer on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.